Love, Lust, and Laughter with Diana Wiley and Billy Sage, Tuesdays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
This is Dr. Diana Wiley, your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. And I'm so happy because for the second time this month, I have Joan Price. Now, we had two interviews last July. So this is part two with Joan Price, who is an advocate for ageless sexuality and fitness. And I just really appreciate her website, joanprice.com. And she says, society's view of seniors as sexless is wrong, wrong, wrong. And that is true, isn't it, Joan Price?
That Hello. Is true, Diana. Thank you for having me on again.
No, you're just a wonderful guest, and you're so informed. And we were talking yesterday about what we might discuss today, and we're going to cover what can we seniors teach younger people about sexuality. That's a hot topic. And we might even touch on older men. You know, a lot of men think, I am my penis. So how do you get out of that penis-centric sort of idea? And we're going to talk about lots of other things, but I want to encourage you, because we started a little bit late today, we probably won't have the break at the half hour. So let me tell you that we'd like you to call in with what you wish your lover knew, or even a potential lover knew, and give us your age, because we're hoping to have younger listeners and older listeners listening, and I think that that's often true for this show. People go and archive it and do that as well. But if you're listening live, please call in at 888-874-4888. If you're too shy to come on the air, then tell our producer what you wish your lover or even a potential lover might know. And maybe you've been a little shy to talk about it. So we'd like to know about that, and both of us will answer those questions.
If I could add to that, Diana.
Please do.
What we specifically want to know is, what do you wish your lover or potential lover knew about your sexuality? Because so many of the problems we have in relationships are because we have no idea how to communicate what we really need about our sexuality, what we want. We sort of want people to just read our minds, and sometimes our minds aren't even clear about what that is anyway, so it's truly an impossible task. But if you were to be able to just implant some message to a lover or potential lover about your sexuality, whatever your age, what would that be? That's what we'd like to know from you.
It's a very good question, and I talk about avoiding psychic sex, because so many folks believe, if you really loved me, you should know. You know,
psychic sex sounds pretty darn good if we could make it work. I'd like some of that.
But no, it isn't so good, because it's like going on a treasure hunt without any clues. Communication really is necessary.
And you're not sure what you're looking for or how to know when you found it, too, right?
Exactly.
Oh, dear, I guess I don't want that.
No. And I think one way that somebody who's shy about speaking up about what they want can say, you know, I was reading an article, or I was reading Joan Price's book.
Even better.
Yeah. Her most recent book is Naked at Our Age, Talking Out Loud About Senior Sex. And the one that preceded that is Better Than I Expected, Straight Talk About Sex After 60.
Better than I ever expected.
Better than I ever expected.
That's want to make sure
difference.
They can find it.
Yeah, so you can say, I was reading an article or Joan Price's book and then the title, and realized there are some things I don't know about what you enjoy in bed, and I want to create that kind of pleasure for you.
Oh, that's good.
Isn't that nice? It kind
yes.
of puts it like you want to give, but of course in giving, you may get some receiving, especially if you have a decent lover.
But you also have to ask for that, because
yeah.
you might then have to say after that discussion, and maybe not even at the same time as that discussion, but in a later discussion, Mm-hmm. You know, I was thinking about our conversation about what you might like to explore, and there's some things I'd sort of like to explore myself. Could we talk about that?
Absolutely. Talking about exploring exactly what, Joan?
Well, in other words, maybe, let's say for a younger woman, maybe it is that a young lover doesn't quite know how to even find the clitoris or what to do with it. And rather than saying, I wish you understood, that I wish you knew, or, boy, instead of making the lover defensive, it's maybe a good way to edge into it to say, hey, there are some things I'd sort of like to try. If you could circle around my clitoris rather than be directly on her, or whatever it is you might like. And for an older woman, maybe the partner is doing what he's always done that always worked, but we change after we don't have the hormonal rush that we used to. We change in what we like, what kind of touch we need. Maybe it's gentler, maybe it's more firm. So we need to communicate that, again, without making our partners feel that we're criticizing them, but just wanting to add to the joy of our sexuality together.
Add to the joy. You say it very well. And also some women, as they age, or even younger women who are having trouble reaching orgasm, they may need a vibrator, a sex toy. And I had one man ask me, why do some women enjoy vibrators so much? And I answered, well, the clitoris is the primary female sex organ, and intercourse does not usually stimulate it enough for orgasms. So the vibrations are a handy way to get clitoral stimulation. You probably know a sex therapist or know of her, Lonnie Barback.
Sure.
And I love what she said about this. She said, if most couples made love by rubbing the testicles against the clitoris, women would climax most of the time, and men would have trouble.
That's wonderful. And I'll bet she said that probably in 1960 or something like that.
Well, yeah, I think, of course, she was a real pioneer.
Oh, and she was a pioneer. She and Betty Dodson.
Yes, and Lonnie Barback at UCSF was really showed the model of pre-orgasmic or anorgasmic women's groups. And, you know, I co-led two of those for 11 years. So we used her model. We expanded it a little bit, but very powerful. But going back to vibrators and in terms of even the clitoris, you know, unlike hands or mouths, vibrators don't get tired.
They don't get tired, and they have more strength and intensity.
Yes.
And they can send the sensation so deeply within us.
Yes.
That is very difficult to do just manually or even with a well-equipped tongue.
Exactly. And also sex toys, vibrators, whatever, they don't desire communication, they don't need to be in the mood, and they don't request reciprocation. So that means they're almost perfect.
Well, actually, one part of that isn't so perfect.
Yeah.
That they're really bad at pillow talk.
So, well, I was going to say they're not human beings. They can't.
If we women had enough of our sex toys, we wouldn't want them at all. We really would still want you guys. We really
absolutely
would.
And they can't kiss, and they can't make you laugh, and they can't warm your feet.
Oh, there you go. I never thought of the warm the feet thing.
One of the things I want to encourage listeners to go to your website, joanprice.com, and then you can link easily into her blog. She was rated one of the top bloggers last year. And she reviews books, she reviews different toys. You can read about her speaking engagements. Perhaps she'll be fortunate enough to be in a city where she's speaking. And I know you're about to go on quite a speaking trip. Tell us a little bit about that.
I think it's because Valentine's Day is coming.
Yes.
Because people are suddenly, I did a lot of touring when the book first came out last June. Mm-hmm. And then it quieted down a little bit, and now suddenly everybody's calling me, and I think it's because Valentine's in the air. And so, yes, I'm doing some dating workshops, which I call How the Heck Do I Date at This Age? Mm-hmm. I'm doing those in two cities locally, and I'm going to Ventura and Santa Barbara in the middle of the month to do a bunch of workshops there. Mm-hmm. Both for couples and for singles, different workshops.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just absolute great fun. I have a lot of other places I'm going later in the spring, and sometimes talking to the public, sometimes talking to professionals. And I'm just loving this part of my work. I'm actually loving all of my work. I'm very lucky to be doing what I'm doing.
Well, and you have a lot of talent. You have an open mind. You're an excellent writer. And you have filled a niche that is very much needed. And I like Candida Royale's blurb on the back of your second book, Naked at Our Age, talking out loud about senior sex. And she said, told through the voices of real people, interspersed with great advice from smart professionals, and let me just add there,
She's one
of them, and I'm one of them. Naked at Our Age is an important resource for anyone who wants to keep pleasure and sensuality in their lives. And, of course, Candida Royale is a pioneer of women-friendly erotica and the author of How to Tell a Naked Man What to Do.
I love that title.
Me too. And it's an excellent book, and it's still available. And not to give my friend Candace, her real name, a plug, I just started rereading that book again. It came out in 2004. It's really a good book.
I have it. I'll have to reread it now.
Yeah.
I've always loved her pioneering spirit and her, spunkiness and just her willingness to do what I do, I think, is talk out loud about sex. I specialize in talking out loud about senior sex. But she's been talking out loud about sex and doing more than talking for decades now. I really admire Candida.
Yeah. She made her first female-friendly erotica movie in 1984. So she was really the first woman on the scene as a producer, director, writer. And I know even going back 15 years ago, I would loan her films to my couples. And at that time, I remember having a couple well into their 60s, and they had never had oral sex as part of their repertoire.
Mm.
And they watched her films, and they kind of got excited about possibilities. And then with my added coaching in our therapy sessions, well, they finally graduated, and he retired, and they went off.
Had oral sex.
And had a lot of oral sex, yes. Traveling around in their big trailer.
I make more time for that, too.
Yes. So, Candace is, and she, quite a while ago, she was a guest on this program, coming into the third year on Love, Lust, and Laughter, and I'm very happy about being associated with Progressive Radio Network.
And while you're being so generous in praising me and praising Candace, I hope you will take some of the credit, too, in the wonderful work that you do, both on the radio and with your clients. So you've got to know there are people out there who really appreciate you, too.
Well, I don't think I've ever had a guest reverse it like that.
Really?
Thank you.
That's
you're very
time.
Generous. I do hear from clients. I just had a client, a new one. And at the end of the hour, I said, I hope this has been helpful. And he said, absolutely. And I did recommend your book because he's a man over 60.
Ah, thank you.
Yeah, I recommend Joan's book a lot. And so, I think it's really read by people, your two books, by people over 50, over 60. But that's a pretty good segue into the topic that we wanted to cover. What can we seniors teach younger people about sexuality?
Mm.
And you want to start that one off? Because there's a lot, it seems to me.
Yeah. I used to teach high school, English, not high school sex.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the kind of teacher, I guess, that students would confide in after hours. And so I learned a lot about their lives other than in completing their English assignments. And as I hear now about adolescents and how sexually free they supposedly are, I worry that this freedom is mainly for the boys.
Mm.
And that the girls are still, now I hope some of your callers will call in and correct me if I'm wrong. I'd love to be wrong about this, but from what I hear, it's all about making sure the boy gets pleasure, and I'm not sure how much this is reciprocated, if at all. I don't hear much about that. I hear about the girl giving the boy oral sex. Does he do that for her? Or that they have anal sex so that she can still consider herself a virgin, in quotes. If that's all they do, is how much is she getting from that? So I'm concerned, and I'd love to hear from some young people who can tell me what the truth is about sexual relationships earlier in life. See, one of the things that as we were growing up, people at my age, I'm 68 years old now, and I mainly talk for and about people roughly my age, a little younger and a lot older sometimes. When we were growing up, we didn't even know anything about women's sexual pleasure. I mean, it was out there in the sexual research and Masters and Johnson and so on, but we were not taught that as part of our sex education. We were taught, this is how babies are made, and here's why you shouldn't do that until you're married. That was basically our sex education.
That's right.
And the rest of it, what just came through discovery or talking to our friends who were not very knowledgeable and told us all sorts of misinformation and experimenting on our own. One thing that I never was told in my upbringing, and I was raised by a gynecologist obstetrician.
Mm-hmm.
I think he would have given me a little better information than that.
Mm-hmm.
But I was never told anything about sexual pleasure. I was never told anything about why the heck we'd even want to have sex, since it sounded so dreadful.
It's so true. There was not very much information given to us, available for us to read. I remember you're saying, I guess off the air, that you went through some of your father's medical books and couldn't find anything about the clitoris.
Right. Well, I didn't even know the clitoris existed. I was looking through my father's medical book.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to understand more about sex. I was not satisfied with what he had told me. So I'm just looking through, and there are all these women's genitalia pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at them really closely, and there's the vagina, and there's this, and there's that. But was there a clitoris ever? No. Mm-hmm. No, there wasn't. So I didn't even know it existed. Would you believe that? I didn't know there was a pleasure center for women like that had thousands of nerve endings and whose only reason for being in the body was to give pleasure. Did I know anything? Not a thing.
Yes. Do you remember how old you were when you finally got the information?
Well, I'm so embarrassed to answer that, but I'm going to. Let me tell you that I fell in love at 15.
Yeah.
My first boyfriend, he was 2 years older. And we had what I consider now to be foreplay for 2 years.
Yes, right.
We kissed, we touched, we aroused each other. We never completed anything.
Right.
Then finally, we had intercourse when I was 17.
Mm-hmm.
And though he certainly enjoyed it, I wondered, oh, I've been holding back all this time just for that. I wonder what's supposed to happen. Why don't I feel what I'm supposed to feel?
And remember that song, Is That All There Is?
Well, that's sort of how I felt.
Yeah.
And it wasn't. And he didn't know any better. He didn't know any more.
No, that's right.
In fact, we thought if we just did it more or harder or longer, then it would work.
Mm-hmm.
I had this mistaken idea. Maybe it's because my hymen didn't really break that I don't feel it. I mean, I didn't know it. You can tell how stupid that idea was, but what did I know?
Well, no, a lot of us had very, very stupid ideas that born out of ignorance.
And you know when I first just had my first orgasm?
How old?
I was a sophomore in college, and I only had it because a college boy knew more than I did about what a woman needed to orgasm.
You were fortunate. Yeah, you were very fortunate.
To
and
find
then
someone by my sophomore year in college.
Yeah. So how did you, because I know you've been involved with fitness for years, and you still teach line dancing in Northern California where you live.
That's right.
And that's how you met your late husband.
Yes.
And we've talked about Robert on this program before, your darling Robert.
My darling Robert.
Yes. And I think the origins of your writing about senior sexuality maybe started in your relationship with him, or tell us how it really started.
That's right. I had been a high school English teacher. I did that for 22 years. Then I was in a near-fatal automobile accident, and I don't recall if we talked about this on your show before, where I almost died, and I had to learn to walk from scratch, and it was very, very difficult, traumatic. I had many injuries, still cope with them now to this day, and that was 1979.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was recovering, well, for one thing, I'll say that my fitness habit, which was only a year and a half old, I'd started taking aerobic dance a year and a half earlier.
Yes.
Got hooked on it. I loved it. I was doing it 6 days a week when this automobile accident happened.
Hmm.
And I was fully convinced that my fitness habit had saved my life.
I believe it.
And so when I was recovering and I was trying so hard to get back to that state, and I kept seeing around me all these people who could walk and chose not to.
Mm.
Who were sedentary with no good reason other than just, too much trouble.
Isn't that the truth? I always say that when we're young, exercise can be an option, but when we're older, it's a mandate. We must do it. The use it or lose it thing is absolutely prominent there.
Well, I wasn't even very old at that point. I think
no,
I was
you
about
weren't.
35.
But I'm saying, right. No, you
and
weren't old.
And I decided at that point that when I got back, got my health back, when I was able to use both legs, I would train to be a group exercise leader, and I would start talking publicly about fitness, telling my story, and hopefully motivating people to do more than they were doing. And that's then what I did. I started speaking and writing and about health and fitness and teaching aerobics myself.
Mm-hmm.
I did that. I had to leave high school teaching just because there weren't enough hours in the day. I never tired of it, but I just couldn't do it all.
Right.
And then my career was really a health and fitness writer. I wrote 5 books and several hundred articles that got published, and that was my new career. Until I fell in love with Robert.
Yes.
And realized, no, I want to write about senior sex now because it is so glorious and nobody is talking about it.
I'm so glad you started doing that because your voice is so needed.
Thank you.
Yes. The studies that I did with Dr. Walter Bortz in the early 90s in Palo Alto on aging and sexuality were later published in medical journals And in fact, Dr. Pepper Schwartz is using one of those studies for an article she's writing for the on human sexuality for the APA. I guess that's American Psychological Association.
Oh.
And one of the interesting things we found, we did a series at the Palo Alto Senior Center, which, oh my goodness, we gave them questionnaires and we asked about their education, and of course that's where Stanford University is, but the education of these folks was really impressive, and there were lots of women who at that time in the early 90s were in their 60s and 70s who had gone back to school because they needed to, because a lot of them married, you know, right out of not even college. So they'd gone back to school. So they're very educated, and many of them were in long-term relationships. And one of the more interesting questions was, what kind of sex would you like now? And a lot of them reported what they'd been having 10 years prior. So there was a drop-off after, for most of them, after 60. And, of course, menopause brings a lot of low libidos for women, but there are ways to overcome that. You write about it. I talk about it.
Absolutely. And sometimes it's the being in a rut with the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
They're not moving forward. They're so used to each other, and they've let things go, and it's really hard to recapture it. But, of course, I write about that, too. It all can be better. That's the thing, you see. Not only does society have stereotypes about older people and sex, mainly that we don't do it or care about it, but we tend to internalize those kinds of stereotypes, too, and we think, oh, well, this is a natural part of aging. It doesn't have to be.
Mm-hmm. No, it doesn't have to be. We did get a question. It's not exactly about improving. Let's see. You added on to that question about
our sexuality.
What your lover wished. Well, it is in a way because the question has to do with a lover. He'd like to have the girlfriend know that he'd like less teeth.
Less teeth? Oh, my gosh. Okay.
Yeah. Less teeth.
Okay.
Because,
Oh, I get that.
Yeah,
and
sure.
He wants to know how to approach her when she's trying so hard to please him?
Yes, she's trying so hard, and he's saying, ouch, how do we get her to use... and some women, of course, get a little... testy when they're being criticized for their techniques, and I would encourage him to say, "Oh, that'd be even better with less teeth." That would be a first.
Well,
step.
I wouldn't even say less teeth because then that's an implied criticism.
Okay.
But, I would say I love that you are wanting to please me with oral sex or whatever the term is that you want to use for it. And I've heard that it's possible to protect my sensitive skin from accidental touching with the teeth if you maybe roll your lips around it. Could you try that once and let's see how that feels? Or keep your mouth open a little bit more so that I feel I can move more in your mouth without worrying about encountering your teeth. If he doesn't give her the impression that she's doing something wrong.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
I think if the sexual relationship is comfortable and playful, it's going to be a whole lot easier to share this and maybe using her fingers or a banana to illustrate the man can show what he'd like. And, encourage experimentation. Any approach, I think, any sexual technique approach requires patience, encouragement, and appreciation.
Yeah.
And
but also directness, but directness in a non-combative way. Directness in a really loving, appreciative way. I just love when we do this. I just feel a little bit held back that I can't really express with my body language how much I like it because I encounter your teeth when I do. Is there some way we can experiment with how to avoid that? So what he's doing is he's taking it on. It's my fault. I'm moving too much in your mouth, even if it's not his fault.
So
that she goes, oh, okay. Yeah, I'd like for him to be able to do that.
Yeah,
or, you know, maybe she's using her teeth because she doesn't want him to move so much. Maybe she's feeling that she'll gag if he does move more. So it'd be so important to get it all out in the open, but without any kind of accusatory thing.
Exactly. And let me just, while we're pausing, because we're not going to have the half-hour break. Well, clearly we're not because we're 35 minutes after the hour. because we started a little bit late. So let me remind listeners that they can either come on the air or even if they're shy, say off the air what they wish their lover or even a potential lover knew. And we didn't get an age on that last one. We'd like to have your age. About wished your lover knew about your sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And that might even be useful information for some of your writing, too, Joan.
Sure thing. Always is.
Yeah, and now we also spoke in our pre-interview about penis-centric men. Sometimes, in my experience, clinical and so on, older men often become less penis-centric, i.e., I am my penis, because their penis doesn't always work as reliably. So they, in fact, slow down, maybe become better at cunnilingus, better at touching all over, better at manual sexual turn-ons with rubbing her clitoris or her other parts of her genitals.
Well, you're right, and there's something more to it, too, that I'd like to add to the mix.
I want you to. Yeah.
That older men also start to value all of these non-penetrative parts of sexuality
mm-hmm.
because they need that in order to be aroused, too. They don't have the instant arousal they used to any more than we women do,
mm-hmm.
if we ever did. I don't know that we ever did.
But mm-hmm.
even men now... and I say that women and men are most evenly matched at this age because we both want slower arousal time. We both want more kissing, more touching, more of what we're taught to call it foreplay, but I don't think it's foreplay because it doesn't necessarily have to have the goal of intercourse. It might not. And maybe we might not even know whether that's what we'll end up doing until we do some of these other things for a while.
Right. Again, sex does not have to have a beginning, a middle, and an end.
That's right.
And it can be more play. And Gail Sheehy talked about how men, older men, I think it was Gail Sheehy who said there's that nice crossover effect somewhere after 50 where men become more romantic. They slow down, they're more intuitive, they like to do the love play, foreplay, whatever, more. Takes them a little longer to maybe get that erection. And women become more assertive. They just become more comfortable talking about what it is they need. And, of course, this would be something, to go back to our question at the top of the hour, what can we seniors teach younger people about sexuality? And it has to do with... talk about it, the good communication.
Yes. Yes.
Say the words.
See, young people, I think, are under the delusion that good sex should just happen. It should be natural. It should be spontaneous. That if you have to talk about it, then there's something wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a myth. That's a myth.
Mm-hmm.
You always have to talk about it. If it feels good spontaneously, well, maybe that's because you're in a new relationship, you're in love, you're full of those brain chemicals that are making things happen better. And if it doesn't work that way, it doesn't mean the relationship can't be good. So there's communication about sex is so important. And who teaches young people about that anyway? Is that in sex ed in school these days? I don't think so.
A little bit in the more enlightened schools, and they're often private schools because public schools have restrictions. But it's not talked about enough at all.
No.
And that also produces unwanted pregnancies because girls are shy to talk about condom use.
Get much better at our age, I'm afraid.
Yeah. Well, yes, that's right. And we have a problem with seniors and HIV problems, especially in Florida.
Yeah. Just because of the number of seniors.
Seniors there.
Not because they're less apt to than other places.
So it's just to finish the thought about the younger people, or the younger girls think, well, you know, if I don't have a condom ready or insist on it, then, you know, if I do, well, let's reverse it. If I do have one ready, he'll think I'm planning for this, and it's better if it's just spontaneous and we're in love. And the late Sol Gordon talked about rehearsing conversations among late teenagers and about if they're going to have first intercourse. Rehearse it ahead of time.
Yes.
Or if the woman is, the girl, the young woman is feeling too much pressure from her boyfriend about going all the way, then she should say, and he'll say maybe, if you really loved me, then you would. And she should say, if you really loved me, you wouldn't put this kind of pressure on me.
Woohoo, that's it.
Yeah, and so, you know, there has to be, though, that kind of preparation, rehearsal for it, so that you're not just being swept away in the moment. So let's go to seniors and safer sex. What do you know about that?
I know a lot about that.
I know you do.
I know that for most seniors, the idea of being prepared with condoms is as weird to them now as it was when they were 15, 16, 17.
Mm-hmm.
And I have this mission to change that.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I feel like I'm pedaling backwards on it because so many people my age say, well, there's no reason to use a condom, or the men will say, it doesn't feel as good. I don't feel as much with a condom. And my response to that is, would you feel more with no sex?
Oh, that's a good response.
Yeah. We have to take responsibility for our sexual health. And
mm-hmm.
I know we've talked about this before, but you can't talk about it enough.
That's right.
That the fastest growing age group of new HIV infections is over 50.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And even for, and there's a resurgence of herpes, chlamydia, all sorts of other sexually transmitted infections among our age group because we don't protect ourselves. Now, there are those who do. There's a wonderful person in my book who uses latex all the time with everyone. And this is his motto, and he even masturbates with condoms in order to make it more erotic to be using condoms.
Now, that's such a good idea, and I have suggested that to some of my single older people, to masturbate with a condom to eroticize it.
Exactly.
Yes.
And when I talk about that, when I give speeches and I talk about that, people are shocked that mouths drop open. They have never thought of that. Thought of that.
Yeah.
But it's so important because even if someone says, you know, the women say to me, I'm going to backtrack a little and just give some examples. Women are always saying to me, oh, no, not condoms. I'll ask him when he was tested last. And that's just all, oh, I can't say that on the air, can I? It's all BS how I can say that. Because, first of all, if you've been tested, that tells you where you were 6 months before, not now. And if you're willing to have unprotected sex with someone, then you were willing before with someone else who was willing with someone else who was willing with someone else. And you just count up the number of dozens of partners that you're pulling into your body
mm-hmm.
by having sex with this one person without a condom. So unless you're in a long-term sexually exclusive relationship and you've been tested and you've continued to use barrier protection for 6 months since the last test, I don't see how there's anything else to do but just use condoms.
Yes, and some men worry about losing their erection when they attempt to put the condom on, and that does happen.
It does.
And I think
there are also ways that their partners can help them.
Help them with their hands, with their mouth.
Yes,
the man can take a
going.
Hmm?
By keeping the sex going while the condom's being put on.
Yes.
By keeping the kissing, the touching, the arousal, the vibrator, the cock ring, whatever it might be.
Yeah, you have a good review of the Hitachi wand for men, and
yes.
your doctor says put the Hitachi wand, which I don't know, a lot of women find it's a little too much industrial strength.
Oh, I think it's just enough, dear.
All right. Well, see, we're all
totally
different.
Love it.
Good. Well, but anyway, for the man to put it on his perineum, maybe even his testicles, to get extra stimulation.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think a man, if he's worried about his erection, he could also take for a while, assuming he goes to his doctor and gets checked out, a Viagra or a Cialis. Just
only
to give
by
him.
Prescription, though.
I know. That's what I'm saying. He goes to his doctor.
Yeah. You said it. I'm just making sure people really heard it.
Yes. Yes. Because there's, when Viagra first was approved in April of 1998, there were a number of Viagra deaths.
Yes.
Men were not going to their physicians.
Yes.
They were getting them online, and then even if it was the real thing, if they were on nitrates, their blood pressure would drop so much and they'd die.
Yeah. I have some big bad warnings about that in my book.
Yes.
You can't borrow a pill from a friend. You can't get it on the Internet. You've got to go through your doctor. You don't know whether, even as educated as you are, you don't know whether you might have a condition or another medication that can react wrong with it.
Mm-hmm.
And there are so many ways this can go bad. So you just got to do what Diana just said and go to your doctor, get the doctor, and also talk to your doctor about what you want. That's the other part of it.
Mm-hmm.
The man maybe will be forced to go to his doctor, but he's not going to admit that he wants to use Viagra because that's saying that he's having erectile difficulties. Hey,
mm-hmm.
You can tell your doctor. It's nothing they don't hear many times a day.
Oh, that's right. And then sometimes diabetes is discovered in the exam or something else.
Mm-hmm.
So the man
early
needs
early heart disease.
Yeah, early heart disease. It's something the man needs to know.
Yeah.
Listeners, again, I am talking to Joan Price, author extraordinaire, and a wonderful lady who has so much information, and you can go to her website, joanprice.com, read a lot on that website, and go to her blog, and that is interactive. And also, you're working on your third book. Talk a little bit about that, and I know you've got, the deadline's tomorrow for submission.
I can still talk about it.
We can still talk about it,
because people will want to know when it's coming out.
And yeah, let's talk about it.
they can look out for it. Yes, I am editing an anthology of senior erotica.
Mm-hmm.
Erotica, erotic stories and memoir essays by people over 50 with characters over 50. Sometimes
mm-hmm.
way over 50. And I decided to do this. I really thought I was done writing books a few months ago. I thought I can't possibly be naked at our age with anything I do in the future. I'm so proud of it, and it's so needed. And I thought, well, maybe I'll do something other than write books now. And then I was reading some erotica, regular old erotica, as I think of it, that comes out all the time from certain publishers and is very good, except that it doesn't talk to me whatsoever. With all
right.
of these people, with the women who are sopping wet and the men who are rock hard, and
mm-hmm.
I'm going, what has this got to do with me?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so I thought I started imagining, what would I like to see in an anthology of erotica? I would like to see really sexy, steamy characters of my age, give or take, who are really enjoying sex, but not without the challenges that they're overcoming, the challenges of aging, whether it is dry vagina or erectile difficulty or knee problems that don't let you kneel and give oral sex to your partner anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it might be, I want to read how people overcome it in a really sexy, erotic way.
Perfect.
So that's
yes.
what I'm collecting right now. And I'm sorry, as you said, the deadline is February 1st for submission. So if
and
any
that's
of you
tomorrow.
Thinking, ooh, I want to write some of that, it's probably too late for that. But it'll come out in spring 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And I just can't wait to share it with you, whatever it turns out to be. I've received about three times as many submissions as I can use already, and it isn't even the deadline yet.
Right. Well, so, it shows there's a real interest there, and there's a need, and I agree with you, more age-appropriate that speaks to the older person.
Yes.
I mentioned when I learned about your anthology yesterday in the pre-interview, I mentioned that so many times with women who are, whatever their age, who are learning to have orgasms, they really prefer the written erotic word than than visual erotica or pornography. And the reading some erotica can really help them focus in and stay in the moment, stay mindful as they self-stimulate.
Yes. Book in one hand, vibrator in the other.
There you go. It works.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of women have trouble, their minds will wander somewhere else. So if they're reading something, they can stay with it.
Good point.
And stay focused.
Yes.
And, yes, be in the moment. And, you know, it's something on the other side of the spectrum. I get some questions about what do I do with a really selfish lover and how should I handle it, and I sort of joke that you can spot a selfish lover when they tell you their favorite kind of oral sex is 68.
Oh.
You do me now, and I'll catch you later.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So.
But, you know, sometimes it isn't even a matter that they're selfish, as that there are differences in what the two people need to stay aroused and to reach orgasm. I've counseled two couples about that, actually. One male-female couple and the other male-male couple.
Mm-hmm.
And in both cases, what they wanted were so different that I suggested that they have different days for pleasing the one and then the other.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
instead of trying to combine it, make it work for both of them when they want very different things, that let's say Thursday night is going to be his night and she'll enjoy with him everything he loves. Saturday afternoon will be her day, and he and she will enjoy everything she loves. And that really seems to help people sometimes. You've probably counseled people in that way yourself.
I do a version of it, but I'm taking a mental note, actually a written note about it, too, because my version is that the couple take turns planning date nights, and some about what kind of sex might follow the dinner out, for instance, but they take turns. So,
I hope you're suggesting that the sex precede the dinner out.
Well,
at our age,
I say if it comes after the dinner, they should eat very lightly because they don't want to have all the blood digesting the food when it needs to go to the genitals for arousal. And what are your reasons, too, for after?
Well, that's a reason, plus that we don't feel like sex very often after a meal. And
well, I don't know that that's true across the board.
Really? Okay.
Especially if there's light, if it's light and the meal has been romantic and there's maybe been candlelight and a lot of sweet talk.
I'd say if you do that part in the afternoon, dinner's going to be even better later.
Okay. I think that's right. There are all kinds of ways. But you know, the going back to digestion and blood flow, we know that frequent sex increases blood flow to the pelvic area.
Right.
So women, even menopausal women, may need less treatment for vaginal dryness. And so I think it's... and then menopausal women who are having frequent good sex have fewer menopausal symptoms, so it's a real win-win kind of situation.
But I also want to sing the praises of lubricant. It isn't a defect if you're not lubricating.
No. I mean, I think a lubricant is an essential.
Yeah.
I mean, and it can also make a hand job way more fun. Like if a woman's going to give her partner, if she's got something like Astroglide, she can make it a fancier hand job. She can go up and down the shaft of the penis and around the head and just make it a lot fancier and smoother.
Absolutely.
And so that's, yeah, we do need lubrication. So, and using, I mean, do you have any favorites in terms of lubricants?
I like two kinds. I like liquid silk a lot.
Yes.
It's water-based, but it feels more like an oil-based one.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't dry up easily, and it feels very natural during intercourse.
Mm-hmm.
I also love Blossom Organics. Do you know about Blossom Organics?
I don't. Tell me.
They're a new company, and they're really wonderful. They make several kinds of organic lubricant for women, and they feel good. They're not smelly. They even make an arousal gel, which is rather nice.
Mm-hmm.
And there are lots of different companies that do wonderful lubricants. I would shop for lubricants at a woman-friendly sexuality shop, either live or online, and not depend on what you see in your local pharmacy when you walk in. There is so much more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
in fact, I've suggested, because what I like isn't necessarily what you'll like, that people buy a little sampler kit of several sample packs of different kinds.
And you can do that in the...
Yeah, you can do that from any of the woman-friendly sex shops that I have as affiliates and advertisers on my blog and many other places. And that way you can just experiment and say, yeah, like this, like that. One thing that I don't know if we covered before is that if you're enjoying oral sex, you probably do not, however, want a lubricant that tastes good, because if a lubricant tastes good, that means it's got sugar, glycerin, sorbitol, one of those sugary things in it, and that's okay externally, but if you then put that in your vagina and you're prone to yeast infections, it's going to act just like stuff and sugar in your vagina.
A very, very good point.
So I would say do the oral sex before the lubricant, and then it doesn't matter what it tastes like. And then get something that doesn't have a taste, so it's all good product, good ingredients.
Joan Price, another great program, thanks to you. And,
thank you.
And on your website, joanprice.com, she invites you to celebrate the joys of zesty sex and a vigorous body as we age, to confront the challenges with knowledge, insight, and humor. Humor is so important.
Uh-huh.
You know, it is just sex after all. Let's keep a sense of humor. And create a community talking out loud about sex and aging. And you do that so well. And we'll let a few more months go by, and then we'll have you back.
I'd be delighted.
And thank you so much.
Thank you, Diane. It's always a pleasure to be on your show.
Well, thank you, Joan. And we'll certainly be in touch about a future show. I wanted to let the listeners know that Brad Coates will be on next Tuesday. And he's a lawyer who has done more than 10,000 divorces, but he speaks about preventing divorce, and he goes on cruise ships talking about it, too, and he's very funny. I had him on this program, but it's been maybe almost 2 years ago, but when I was in Hawaii, because that's where he practices law, he was one of my most frequent guests on my radio show there, and he knows Billy Sage, and I'm hoping that maybe we can get Billy Sage, who hasn't been on the show for a while. He's had the death of his wife and some other things, so we may get Billy Sage, fingers crossed, back next week for that show. So I hope you'll tune in. Again, Joan Price, thank you.
Ti divertirai, che traguardi vuoi farmi trovare.